Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 9th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Views Differ on Natural Gas Demand from Data Centers, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Data centers are expected to require large amounts of energy as they come online in the next few years. But just how much energy they will need is now in question. Major electric grid operators, including the Electric Reliability Council of Texas and PJM Interconnection, have projected demand will reach 50 gigawatts by 2030. That forecast is being questioned in a new analysis from Enverus Intelligence Research. EIR's new analysis projects 30 gigawatts of new data center capacity through 2030. This more conservative outlook reflects the impact of stricter utility requirements, which have already reduced speculative project proposals by more than 50% in such states as Ohio. Recent policy changes in states like Ohio include higher power costs and stricter credit requirements, have led to a 15 gigawatts or more than 50% decline in proposed data center projects. Our research shows that while data center expansion will drive substantial energy demand, it will have a marginal impact on natural gas in the immediate years, said Jimmy McNamara, principal analyst at EIR, in a statement. By focusing on confirmed projects and real-world constraints, we provide a more accurate outlook for both the power and natural gas sectors. EIR is more confident that behind-the-meter projects with dedicated gas generation offer a more certain path to higher gas demand. The analysis put behind-the-meter demand growth at 2.1 billion cubic feet of gas per day. The report notes that if all new capacity were gas-fired, it could add up to 4.1 billion cubic feet per day to lower 48 natural gas demand by 2030. However, gas growth likely will be lower as grid-connected data centers use mixed-generation sources. For example, a 1-gigawatt data center uses about 140 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, less than 1% of Appalachia's daily production. Joseph Tripke, addressing the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance's annual meeting last week, predicted spending on behind-the-meter power, currently at $5 billion in the Permian Basin alone, could double or triple by 2030. This article is entitled Analysis: Why Migrant Encounters in Big Bend Sector Continue to Drop, by Trevor Hawes, editor. Illegal border crossings in the Big Bend sector continue to fall, after seeing a dramatic decrease in 2024, a key statistic omitted in a recent U.S. Border Patrol press release. Border Patrol on December 3rd reported that migrant encounters across the sprawling Big Bend sector fell 74% between fiscal years 2022-23 and 2024-25. Fiscal year 2022-23 saw 11,823 encounters, and 2024-25 saw 3,096, according to Border Patrol data. While the math is correct, it's not a complete picture of the declination in border crossings. There were 4,921 migrant encounters recorded in 2023-24, a year-over-year decline of 6,902, or 58%. Data from this three-year period show a high of 1,523 encounters in the Big Bend sector in November 2022. That number dipped to 981 in February 2023 and jumped again to 1,421 in May 2023 before plummeting 71% to 412 the following month. The timing aligns with the shift from Title 42 expulsions enacted during the COVID-19 pandemic and reintroduction of Title 8 enforcement action, which is standard policy. Title 42 is an emergency health authority expulsion that doesn't carry the consequences found under Title 8, such as identity and background checks, potential federal prosecution, and formal deportation orders. Title 42 had no legal penalties. Our sustained efforts to enforce consequences under our long-standing Title 8 authorities, combined with expanding access to lawful pathways and processes, have driven the number of migrant encounters along the southwest border to their lowest levels in more than 2 years. Troy A. Miller, who was acting U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner at the time, said in a June 2023 press release. In addition to the return of Title 8, enhanced detection and identification capabilities have contributed to the decline in border crossings, Border Patrol said in its December 3rd release. Noting, technology such as the deployment of 55 autonomous surveillance towers across the Big Bend sector as having a big impact. The decrease in illegal entries is a testament to strong border policy, as well as the tireless efforts of our agents, support personnel, and partners like the Department of War and Texas Military Department, said Big Bend Sector Chief Patrol Agent Lloyd M. Easterling. The men and women of Big Bend Sector have shown resolve, expertise, and heart. They conduct their border security mission with great skill, while operating in some of the most rugged terrain in the country. The Big Bend sector spans 517 miles, about a quarter of the entire U.S.-Mexico border. Migrant encounters have averaged about 221 per month since President Donald Trump took office in January, a number lower than encounters under former President Joe Biden, starting with the resumption of Title 8. The per-month encounters average during that time was 418. There were 188 encounters recorded in October, the first month of the current fiscal year. This article is entitled, County Pushes to Modernize Death Investigations. Investigator Draws on Personal Loss to Guide Grieving Families, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Tracy Karst Culler understands how people die. She also understands the pain felt by survivors. Karst Culler is the lead death investigator for the Midland County Medical Examiner's Office. She became interested in the field after there were deaths within her own family, giving her firsthand knowledge of how hard the experience can be. I've just had a lot of death in my life, she explained to the Reporter Telegram. I have lost two fathers, my biological dad and a stepfather. I have lost my mom, a brother to suicide, and then a brother in a car accident. I just know how I felt. And being able to have someone like us, our team that we have now, they care about these families. And that means everything, because I have been there. I have been on the other side of that. Midland County has a medical examiner's office, but it does not conduct autopsies because there is no forensic pathologist on staff. I just want the community to know that we are a medical examiner county now, she explained. Because people still mistake us for the justice of the peace and even law enforcement. According to county officials, the transition of handling deaths from the Justice of the Peace to the Medical Examiner's Office is a recent change. Until last year, all death investigations in Midland County were handled under the Justice of the Peace, a Midland County spokesperson said. In 2023, the county established a dedicated medical examiner's office and hired Dr. Shailesh Ganta as Midland County's first medical examiner. While Ganta reviews all medical records and oversees investigative determinations, he does not conduct autopsies. Karst Kuller said that eventually the plan is for Midland County to expand services in order to save funding on having to outsource these services to other places. Midland County recently added a transport technician position, and Zach Rivera has been hired to fill that role. The job includes the removal and transport of decedents from homes, hospitals, and other facilities. Since beginning in October, Rivera's work has helped the county save more than $40,000, reducing reliance on private contractors and supporting more timely responses, said the county. Previously, county officials stated that Midland County was paying more than $300,000 annually for outsourced services related to autopsy, toxicology, transportation, and associated fees. Since moving these services in-house, officials said Midland County is reducing costs while also improving responsiveness and quality of care. Anytime we can save taxpayer dollars while improving service, that's a win for Midland County, said County Judge Terry Johnson in a statement. These changes show what can happen when we invest in our own people and give departments the tools they need to succeed. While the Midland County Medical Examiner's Office handles a wide range of deaths, it also conducts community education on the prevention of accidents. As a team, we go out to oil companies during their safety meetings and do presentations on the number of accidents in Midland County, Karst Kuller said. We talk about oil field traffic accidents, industrial accidents, and even taking medication. At some point in the future, the Midland County Medical Examiner's Office aims to add a forensic pathologist as well as a dedicated facility. This past year, Karst Kuller said the Medical Examiner's Office handled 711 deaths, with approximately 110 deaths from October to December. Rivera's focus is on service, which he says is vital to the Medical Examiner's Office. Every call we respond to is someone's worst day, he said. Our team is committed to ensuring their loved ones are treated with dignity and respect from the moment we arrive. This article is entitled DPS, Man Arrested After 103-mile-per-hour Chase Crash in Midland, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Department of Public Safety troopers have arrested and charged a man who led them in a high-speed chase through the city of Midland. According to an arrest affidavit obtained by the Reporter-Telegram, at approximately 12:47 a.m. November 16th, Abraham Francisco Puente Jr., 20, was arrested after a warrant was issued for his arrest. In the affidavit, a DPS trooper said that while patrolling Business 20, he observed a pickup truck traveling at a high rate of speed. When the trooper initiated his front antenna, the digital readout showed a speed of 103 miles per hour. According to the trooper, Puente allegedly made a quick right turn onto North Fairgrounds Road and then accelerated rapidly. Puente allegedly then turned his vehicle east onto Cuthbert Avenue and turned off the vehicle's lights in a manner that the trooper said was consistent with trying to avoid detection. Next, the vehicle continued west on Cuthbert Avenue at a high rate of speed, allegedly disregarding multiple stop signs. After traveling on Cuthbert, Puente allegedly turned right onto Carver Street, continuing north. When the vehicle turned east onto Parker Avenue, Puente lost control and allegedly struck a fence on the property along the 1200 block of Parker Avenue. Additionally, Puente allegedly struck a parked pickup truck, causing the parked vehicle to impact a second parked pickup truck. After Puente struck the parked pickups, he allegedly fled from the trooper on foot. In the affidavit, the trooper advised that the driver and sole occupant who exited the vehicle matched the driver's license photo of the registered owner of the vehicle. Additionally, the trooper stated that a cell phone was found in the driver's side floorboard of the vehicle with the lock screen photo showing the 2019 Chevy that had struck the other vehicles. While on scene, the trooper said two women called the phone left behind and stated they were looking for Abraham. Puente was charged with evading arrest detention with a vehicle, a state jail felony. He has been released on bail. This article is entitled, Man Accused of Smashing Windshield After Ride Refusal, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. A Midland man has been arrested and charged with an aggravated assault after allegedly asking a person for a ride, then smashing their windshield with a pole. According to an arrest affidavit obtained by the Reporter Telegram, Joe Garza Jr. was allegedly involved in an incident at approximately 1:52 a.m. October 24th. The victim told officers that she was picking up her children in the 1100 block of East Noble Avenue when Garza allegedly asked for a ride to a hotel. When the victim refused, Garza allegedly chased her around the vehicle, which caused her to fear for her life, police said. The victim said Garza was about to hit her with a pole. The victim told officers she had her youngest child in her hands and had to place him in the front seat as she got into the vehicle to drive off. The victim's other children were in the vehicle at the time of the altercation. According to the affidavit, the victim is also pursuing charges and estimates $400 in damages to her windshield. Garza is charged with felony aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. His bail has been set at $50,000. Additionally, another misdemeanor charge of criminal mischief carries a bail of around $2,000. This article is entitled, Midland Fee-Only Planner Helps Young Families Build Wealth, by Luke Diaz, staff writer. Beyond Balanced Financial Planning is a local firm founded by Crystal Rao in September 2017. Having previously worked in finance for several companies, Rao founded Beyond Balanced with the intention of streamlining financial strategies for her clients. It was important to me to be a fee-only fiduciary, and the reason why was because this industry is very convoluted, recalled Rao, who recently spoke about her business at a Founders Blend meeting. At the end of the day, I don't sell products. Our product is my advice, and so clients pay me directly for my advice day in and day out. After graduating from the Texas A&M University Corpus Christi, Rao worked for 4 years with USAA as a financial planner before pursuing her MBA at the University of Texas, El Paso. While there, she decided that she wanted to work in fee-only fiduciary tax planning. But after moving to Midland with her husband and 3 kids, she discovered there was no such individualized practice in the city. As such, she worked with companies such as Raymond James for several years until she was able to establish her own company, accepting clients for the first time in early 2018. I really saw a need for people that were in their 30s and 40s who were trying to build wealth, but also balance having a family, and just needed planning advice more so than investment advice, Rao told the Reporter Telegram. A lot of advisors require somebody to have $1 million in assets before they'll work with them. But while we do investments, we focus primarily on the planning part of how you get to those $1 million or more. It took many years of education and experience just to make sure that I was proficient in planning topics. And so I like to make that distinction to people that I am a planner and not an advisor. In addition to serving 75 households, consisting mainly of young people starting families, Rao says she also works with small business owners by helping them to start 401k plans and providing educational seminars. She begins with a kickoff meeting to evaluate one's goals, then evaluates income and investments, creates tax and security strategies, and helps track progress over time. Rao does not employ other advisors, but does have a client service associate that helps with the paperwork. Having him has been great because it's taken all that stuff off my shoulders, Rao said. You know, the day-to-day tasks that kind of weigh you down so that I can focus better on serving my clients. Rao believes what sets Beyond Balanced apart is that it helps to make things easier for the client by removing financial jargon and making her relationships with clients more personable. She hopes that Beyond Balance can be a tool, not just for her clients, but all Midlanders, to recognize the options they have. I want them to know that there are multiple different ways to work with advisors, and you have to choose the way that's right for you, she said. I just hope people see that they can go to somebody that really fits their needs and understands them, instead of a run-of-the-mill investment advisor who is just trying to accumulate assets. There are people out there that can truly help you understand where your money is going and why. It's not just about investments. It's about the big picture. Tax planning, budgeting, etc. This article is entitled Roots, Heritage, Come to Downtown. Restaurant reopened under new name with renewed sense of purpose. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Don Quinto Bar and Grill has officially opened downtown with a ribbon-cutting ceremony, marking a long-awaited milestone for the Mexican restaurant. Formerly known as Just Another Mexican Bar and Grill, the restaurant reopened under a new name and renewed sense of purpose. The business brings a fresh new start to a familiar corner, which was previously site of the Tequila's downtown restaurant and Witch Witch Sub Shop. What's in a name? Owner Yuvia Alvidrez said Don Quinto Bar and Grill is rooted in family tradition. The name, the menu, and even the interior design. Don Quinto Bar and Grill's name is inspired by Alvidrez's grandfather, who was known by the nickname Don Requinto. We were originally going to be named Don Quinto, but we went a different route because of sarcasm, she explained. When Alvidrez first announced her plans to open a downtown restaurant, she was constantly asked what kind of restaurant it would be, to which she would sarcastically answer that the restaurant was just another Mexican bar and grill. And the phrase stuck as the name. After giving the name further thought, Alvidrez felt called to return to her original plan. We needed to go back to our roots, Alvidrez said. We do have roots behind this. The name is inspired by my grandfather, who was a founding father of music where we come from. Don Requinto was a trailblazer in the music scene, uplifting regional and mariachi music, Alvidrez said. He actually brought a lot of that to Midland and Odessa. I shortened his nickname to name the restaurant after him. The name change is reflected in her roots, her heritage, and in the restaurant's menu. I believe that food is a way that families come together, she said. In my family, we always sat down and had a meal together, having important conversations and spending time together. The menu. Inspired by family recipes, the restaurant's menu offers a fusion of Mexican and West Texas flavors. The restaurant's cuisine is inspired by Alvidrez's mother and her former in-laws, which is where she learned many of her recipes. Her mother is from Chihuahua, Mexico, and her in-laws are from Sinaloa, Mexico, helping her blend the best dishes of both states. It's always been helpful because you get the best of two worlds, she said. You get amazing seafood from Sinaloa, but also the best from Chihuahua. She added that because we are in West Texas, the menu also features hamburgers, tacos, ribeyes, chicken wings, and more. While the menu is small, it offers a variety of dishes and flavors, where everyone can find something they like. For appetizers, customers can order elote, pork belly, queso fundido, ahi tuna tostas, and more. As an entree, the restaurant offers a mix of seafood, burgers, and salads, and Mexican classics. Customers can order fajitas, red and green agua chiles, shrimp cocktail, a green chili burger, chori queso burger, tacos, and much more. Customers can also find shareable parrilladas, barbecue, or the Mexican trompo, which is your choice of meat slowly cooked on a vertical rotisserie called a trompo. The trompo is commonly used for al pastor tacos. Sides include Mexican rice, charro beans, French fries, garden salad, and baked potato. Comes with loaded option. For dessert, customers can find churros served in carts resembling an ice cream cart and marzipan creme brulee. The restaurant also has a full bar and offers a variety of drink options. Customers can order shot flights, cantaritos, and more. Alvidrez said the restaurant will also bring back karaoke nights on Thursdays and will open for brunch on Saturdays. Brunch will offer a specialized menu and will have a DJ playing music. Don Quinto Bar and Grill is located at 100 North Main Street, Unit 100. Business hours are 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday to Saturday. This article is entitled, Tag Unit Says It Found Explosives While Executing Warrant, by B. K. Richter, staff writer. The Permian Basin Tag Unit reports it found completed improvised explosives while serving a warrant for drug possession, leading to the evacuation of an apartment complex. At about 4:30 p.m. Thursday, December 4th, the Permian Basin Tag Unit, which includes personnel from the Midland Police Department, executed a search warrant at an apartment complex in the 5,000 block of West Loop 250 North, the city said in a press release. MPD reported that the subject was also believed to be in possession of a firearm and that the subject was located and apprehended, the city said. Additionally, MPD reported that detectives located explosive/bomb components, precursor materials, and completed improvised explosives. Shannon McGee, 46, was placed under arrest for the possession of methamphetamine. The Midland Police Department Explosives Ordnance Disposal Unit, EOD, responded, and the surrounding apartments were evacuated. Midland Police Department EOD, with the assistance of the Odessa Police Department EOD, Lubbock Police Department EOD, and the ATF, safely removed the explosive materials without incident, the city said. MPD also reported that the charges for possession of explosive materials are pending. No additional information has been released to the public at this time. This article is entitled, West Tex Urgent Care Earns Award from Texas Workforce Commission, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A group of Texas employers received special recognition from the Texas Workforce Commission and local partners at a recent annual Texas Workforce Conference. Each of the 28 local workforce development boards recognized a local employer of excellence at the conference. The awards honor employers actively involved with Texas workforce solutions that have positively impacted employers, workers, and the community. Workforce Solutions Permian Basin recognized West Tex Urgent Care. West Tech's Urgent Care has demonstrated outstanding dedication to workforce development and measurable contributions to the Texas workforce system's goal of equipping employers and workers with the necessary resources and skills to maintain Texas's economic competitiveness, WSPB said in a statement. As a trusted provider of accessible, high-quality health care in the Permian Basin, West Tech consistently supports community workforce needs beyond clinical care. Utilizing Texas workforce system resources and innovative approaches, West Tech developed a comprehensive medical assistant and medical receptionist internship program, offering hands-on training in clinical and administrative settings. The Employer of Excellence Award is a well-earned recognition for outstanding contributions to both the community and the Texas economy, said TWC Chairman Joe Esparza. From job creation to workforce innovation, West Tech's Urgent Care is a model for a growing and thriving business in Texas. The commission also recognized large employer, small employer, veteran-friendly employer, and Higher Ability Employer of the Year honorees at the 28th Annual Conference. DHR Health, nominated by Workforce Solutions Lower Rio Grande Valley, was named Large Employer of the Year. In the past 12 months, DHR Health has created more than 1,100 new positions, significantly contributing to job growth in healthcare and allied fields. The employer supports approximately 6,000 direct jobs and 5,000 indirect jobs, spanning industries such as construction, maintenance, medical supply chains, retail, and food service. Large employer finalists were Georgia Pacific, nominated by Workforce Solutions Deep East Texas, and Knauf, nominated by Workforce Solutions for the Heart of Texas. Rolling Plains Memorial Hospital, nominated by Workforce Solutions of West Central Texas, was named Small Employer of the Year. During the 2024-25 school year, Rolling Plains Memorial Hospital supported more than 30 students with hands-on learning and dedicated more than $48,000 in staff time and resources to work-based learning efforts. The Small Employer finalist was Mason Construction, nominated by Workforce Solutions Southeast Texas. The Veteran-Friendly Employer of the Year was Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages, nominated by Workforce Solutions Greater Dallas. Coca-Cola Southwest Beverages employs a significant proportion of veterans, more than 900 individuals during 2024, accounting for over 10% of its workforce. With more than 200 veterans hired at self-sustaining wages just last year. The company also has a dedicated veteran recruiting team. Kearney Park Compounding Pharmacy, also nominated by Workforce Solutions Greater Dallas, was honored as Higher Ability Employer of the Year. Kearney Park has provided meaningful work experiences to students with disabilities for two consecutive years. In 2024, the pharmacy welcomed 6 summer Earn and Learn participants, and in 2025, it continued its commitment with 1 student placement. Currently, the pharmacy employs 6 individuals, with approximately 25% of the workforce identifying as individuals with disabilities.
And up next, Pfluger talks LNG accomplishments by Ruth Campbell. A bill U.S. Representative August Pfluger is proud of this year is the Unlocking Our Domestic LNG Potential Act. It hasn't become law yet, but it has passed the U.S. House and has a companion bill in the U.S. Senate. At the end of his presidency, Joe Biden banned the export of LNG to certain countries, which Pfluger said is very harmful because of the way they do their contracts and the fact that they need a long view. Pfluger said Biden was also banning exports to NATO allies. He was banning them to some of our best partners and friends around the world, and for no reason. In fact, they completely lied about in one of their reports some of the environmental impacts, and we pushed back on that, called them out on it, had several hearings and testimonies to prove that they had covered up the truth, Pfluger said in a December 5th phone interview from Odessa. So I once again made it my goal to pass legislation that would prevent any future administration from doing that, and we did. We passed the LNG Export Act. This is my bill that basically takes the approval out of the politicized agencies and out of radical Secretary of Energy and puts it into a better entity and better approval process. The legislation passed the House in November but has not passed the Senate yet. It was bipartisan with double-digit Democrats voting to approve this bill, and now we're waiting on the Senate to do the same. But the impact of this is that our natural gas, the associated gas in the Permian Basin, now will have certainty to be able to travel to the Gulf Coast or travel through pipelines to be liquefied and to be sent overseas to the places where we can sell it. Those revenues will directly impact our economy. We will continue to use LNG here in the United States, but we will produce more because the certainty exists that the marketplace is now competitive and the government's not going to kill it, Pfluger said. LNG is liquefied for transport around the world. Once it gets to its destination, it is used in the process of making electricity. Pfluger said natural gas is one of the most efficient and clean-burning fuels that allows electricity to be delivered at an affordable and reliable rate. Today in Odessa, it's not very sunny and there's no wind, so you have no help on the grid from solar or wind. But natural gas works all the time. It works when you need it, and it's very affordable, Pfluger said. Back after the longest governmental shutdown in U.S. history, Pfluger said Congress is back at work. Democrats will use any tool and any weapon to prevent us from getting the agenda done that restores law and order and provides our economy with transparency and competitiveness that strengthens our military. They hate President Trump, and the only thing they can do to stop the rightfully needed progress that was being made was to try to shut down the government. But they didn't win on that issue. They looked really silly in doing that, he said. We're back at it, and I'm working on behalf of the 11th District of Texas, passing legislation like the LNG Export Act and the Broadband Deployment Act, and quite a few health care provisions that will make health care more affordable, he added. Pfluger has said he passed more bills than any other congressman. They've all been bipartisan. I've championed the effort to deliver the $12 billion reimbursement to the state of Texas for the border damages that we suffered over the last 4 years. That's been something that was my initiative from day one, and I'm proud to report that we've been able to do that, he said. Asked what he's hearing from constituents, Pfluger said people know prices have risen, that Obamacare is a failure, and they want Congress to continue working on affordability. I am right in the middle of this effort, doing everything I possibly can to lead the Republican conference on making sure that we have legislation that leads to affordability. I was in the White House this past week presenting a plan to them about affordability, so whether it's housing or health care or anything else, we do have those plans. They take time. We passed incredible legislation that reduced every American's tax bill this past July, and those take time to take effect. But as we get into 2026, we're going to see the positive effects, and we're going to keep that going, Pfluger said. And up next, gunfire lands Odessan in jail. An Odessa man was booked into the Ector County Jail early Saturday morning after his friend told deputies he fired a shot at him, and they tussled over the gun, causing two more shots to be fired. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, dispatchers received a shots-fired call from the 900 block of Yucca Avenue around 9:40 p.m. Friday. When deputies arrived, a man told them that shortly after dropping off Ari Mancha at his house, Mancha 20 came outside with a gun and fired it at him as he sat inside his Chrysler 300, the report stated. The bullet struck the vehicle. The man said he got out of the car and fought with Mancha to try and get control of the Glock, and it went off two more times before Mancha ran away with it, the report stated. Deputies found two spent shell casings on the scene, the report stated. Mancha came back to the scene, admitted to firing the gun, and said he had thrown it under a parked car after pulling the magazine out, the report stated. Mancha was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and tampering with evidence. His bail was set at $50,000. And up next, man accused of threatening stepson with multiple knives. An Odessa man was arrested on an aggravated assault warrant Friday that was issued after his wife and stepson accused him of threatening the younger man with a couple of knives. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call around 5 p.m. November 18th from the 700 block of East 96th Street. The caller said a man was trying to stab someone and was kicking down their door. When police arrived, a 25-year-old man told officers he heard his mother and Eric Mendua, 42, arguing, and he told the older man not to disrespect his mother, the report stated. The man said Mendua pulled open a kitchen drawer, causing it to fall, and Mendua grabbed two knives off the floor. The younger man said Mendua pointed the knives at him and then swung at him in a side-to-side slashing motion, attempting to cut him with one of the knives, the report stated. According to the report, the man said Mendua went outside but then forced his way back inside and grabbed the third knife. Although Mendua initially denied doing anything involving knives, he eventually told officers he grabbed two knives to defend himself and later hid them in a box inside his garage, the report stated. He also admitted to grabbing a third knife. Mendua's estranged wife corroborated much of her son's story, the report said. Mendua was released from the Ector County Jail Saturday after posting a $50,000 surety bond. And up next, Odessa woman arrested in meth investigation. An Odessa woman was arrested on a warrant Friday that was issued in connection with a drug investigation that resulted in several grams of methamphetamine being seized. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives received information in September that Wendy Young was selling methamphetamine in Odessa. During the course of their investigation, detectives learned Young lived on West Albert Drive and she and her boyfriend drove a Nissan Murano. On September 24th, detectives pulled the couple over after Young's boyfriend failed to use his turn signal on West Miles, the report stated. According to the report, detectives found 29.8 grams of meth inside a caulking gun on a rear floorboard and a small amount was located on Young. Detectives obtained a search warrant for Young's house and found 1.6 grams of meth and 5.8 grams of THC in her bedroom. Young was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of two counts of manufacturing / delivery of a controlled substance and one count of possession of a controlled substance. Her bail was set at $70,000. And up next, two killed, three seriously injured in head-on collision. Two Odessa men were killed and three others seriously injured in a head-on collision early Sunday morning near SH 302 and FM 181. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, a Ford F-150 heading west in the eastbound lanes of SH 302 collided head-on with a Hyundai Elantra just east of the intersection of FM 181 at 4:45 a.m. The drivers of both vehicles, ages 19 and 26, were taken to Medical Center Hospital in serious condition, as was a 16-year-old boy from the Ford F-150. Two passengers from the Hyundai, Sebastian Trevino, 25, and Juan Guerrero, 26, were pronounced dead at the scene, according to the DPS. Everyone involved in the crash was wearing seatbelts. The crash remains under investigation. And now this. Second arrest made in prescription drug raid. A second arrest has been made in connection with the seizure of more than 300 grams of prescription drugs. According to an OPD report, detectives received a tip that Josu Pineda Corral and Luciana Carlos Payan and undercover officers were able to make two drug buys within a week after making arrangements via text with Payan. Detectives obtained a search warrant for an apartment in the 6500 block of Eastridge on December 3rd. Inside, they found 214 grams of tramadol, 38 grams of the weight loss drug Phentermine, 41 grams of the anti-anxiety medication Alprazolam, along with pills to treat erectile dysfunction, inflammation, phlegm, bacterial infections, back pain, and excess water, the report stated. Pineda Corral was arrested and booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of three counts of manufacturing / delivery of a controlled substance and possession of dangerous drugs. His bail was set at $101,500. Payan was arrested and booked into the jail on Saturday on the same charges. She was released after posting surety bonds totaling $67,000. And now, countersuit filed in train truck crash by Kim Smith. A trucking firm being sued in connection with last year's train crash that killed two Union Pacific employees in Pecos has filed a counter-lawsuit in Reeves County District Court against Union Pacific. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, a Union Pacific Railroad train was traveling west through Pecos when it collided with a BOSS Heavy Haul LLC truck tractor transporting an oversized load at the Cedar Street crossing around 5 p.m. December 18th. The four locomotives and 11 rail cars derailed, 9,000 gallons of locomotive diesel fuel spilled, and the train's engineer and conductor were killed. In addition, three bystanders were injured. According to the NTSB, the oversized load entered the railroad crossing about a minute before the crash and the flashing lights, crossbucks, gates, and bells activated while the load was blocking the train's path. The train slowed from 68 to 64 miles per hour right before the collision, the NTSB reported. The speed limit for that stretch is 7. The wives, parents, and children of the two men killed, Philip Arroyo and Clay Eldon Burt, filed a lawsuit against Union Pacific and Boss Heavy Haul LLC in Reeves County District Court. Now attorneys for BOSS have filed a counterclaim lawsuit against UP, alleging the company is responsible for the crash. According to the lawsuit filed by the Austin law firm of Todd, Barron, Thomas, Hudman, Bedout, and Rodriguez, UP recklessly maintained the crossing as a dangerous, humped crossing with steep inclines while knowing heavy industrial traffic went through it daily and despite knowing there was a 2019 crash there between a train and truck trailer. The lawsuit further alleges UP's train crew didn't take any measures to stop or slow the train until it was only a quarter mile away from the crossing, even though they had a clear view from more than a mile away. Boss's oversized load, which was headed to Mentone, was more than 15 feet high and flanked by a police escort and two pilot cars with flashing emergency lights, the lawsuit stated. Boss's attorneys alleged UP had an extensive ongoing pattern of malfeasance and cited other derailments as evidence. The police escort and the escort vehicles didn't see or hear any signs of an approaching train, and thus had no reason to stop the truck driver with the oversized load, the lawsuit stated. Boss is seeking unspecified actual and punitive damages. Hello there, this is Jim, and I'm reading from the Odessa American for December 9th, 2025. Grandview and Yukon Road intersection reconstruction continues. As part of a public-private partnership with LECO Properties, the intersection of Yukon and Grandview will continue to be under construction. Friday, December 12th, will be the start of Phase 2 of this four-phase project. The intersection will be expanded to 7 lanes, including free right turn lanes, improved left-hand turn lanes, new traffic signals, pavement widening, and new curb and gutter, a City of Odessa news release said. During this time, all free right turn lanes will be closed and traffic directed to main lanes for circulation. Left turn lanes will remain open. This phase of construction is estimated to be a duration of 5 weeks out of a 28-week project, 196 calendar days. Please be mindful of changing traffic patterns as construction progresses throughout the phases of this project. Closures will be clearly marked to help guide you safely around the area. These closures are to help improve the infrastructure to better serve our community. Please follow all traffic signs and detours. Consider using alternate routes to avoid delays. Allow extra travel time during this period. If you have any questions or concerns, feel free to reach out to LECO Properties at 432-550-0073 or the City of Odessa's Engineering Department at 432-335-3242.
This is the Life Tributes column. Rosalind Redfern Grover, September 5, 1941 to November 21, 2025. Rosalind Redfern Grover, a devoted and determined West Texan, passed away peacefully on November 21st at Midland Memorial Hospital. She was born in Midland on September 5, 1941, to Rosalind Capps Redfern and John Joseph Redfern, Jr. Rosalind worked for a short time in California as a teacher, but ultimately returned to Midland. This was the beginning of her deep and lifelong commitment to her hometown and the oil and gas industry. Throughout her lifetime, she became involved with industry and civic organizations. While her business achievements were significant, her impact on Midland as a civic leader was extraordinary. Ross's deepest and most consistent commitment was to improving health care for the citizens of West Texas. Her involvement with Midland Memorial Hospital began early in life, watching as her father was chairman of the board of directors, a position she also later held. She believed that the quality of health care and health care facilities should be as remarkable as the people of the community. She chaired the Campaign for Tomorrow, raising $67 million in private funds, in addition to securing the $115 million bond program with the goal of building a new patient wing for the people of Midland. Her commitment to the hospital improvements continued well after the new hospital was built, as she championed the Prop 8 sales tax initiative, which voters overwhelmingly approved. Along with her local efforts, she had a longtime advisor relationship with MD Anderson in Houston and served on its board of visitors until her passing. Rosalind Redfern Grover is survived by her children, daughter Rossin Grover, and stepsons Arden Roy Grover Jr., David Brown Grover, Jeffrey Todd Grover, and husband Lonnie Jordan Grover. Her grandchildren, Arden Capps Killingstad and wife Mallory Harrison Killingstad, Rosalind Taylor Killingstad, Peyton Riley Grover, Landry Brooks Grover, and Ethan Jack Grover, as well as her great-grandchildren Ava Barron Killingstad and Naomi Jean Killingstad, and her goddaughter Rosalind Balcher Abero. The family also want to offer a heartfelt thanks to Midland Memorial Hospital, a place she supported, championed, and loved, and its exceptional staff for the thoughtful, compassionate care they provided during her final days. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, December 11th at 12 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Reception will follow at the Midland Country Club from 12:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the Midland Memorial Foundation because, quote, if it's you on the gurney, how good do we have to be, unquote, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Gabriel Montez Ramirez, February 25, 1957 to November 28, 2025. Gabriel Montez Ramirez, 68, of Midland, passed away Friday, November 28. He was born on February 25, 1957 in Stanton. He served in the Army and was stationed in Germany. He worked as a welder. He loved the Dallas Cowboys, whether they won or lost. He is preceded in death by his great-grandmother, Bernabe Montez, grandmother Lorraine Kennedy, grandfather Jesus Montez, mother Ruth Ramirez, father Ramon Ramirez, sisters Yolanda, Sylvia, and Belinda Ramirez, and Delma Lopez. He is survived to cherish his memory by his sister Lucy Longoria, Willie, brother Ramon Ramirez Jr., Sylvia, and sister Terry Adkins, Jeff. His children, daughter Sara Ramirez, Arizona, and sons Juan Ramirez, El Paso, Miguel Ramirez, Argentina, as well as three grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Viewing will be Sunday, December 7th from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. that evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is set for Monday, December 8th at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel, and burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Gloria Jean Kirshner, February 26, 1948 to November 22, 2025. Gloria Kirshner, 77, of Midland, passed away at her home on Saturday, November 22nd, surrounded by her family. Gloria was born on February 26, 1948, in La Mesa. She was a devoted wife, mother, and sister. Gloria was gifted in many ways. She was an excellent cook, but she was especially known for her remarkable talent as a hairdresser, a profession she loved and excelled in. While living in Crane, she was a faithful member of the First Christian Church. Gloria was preceded in death by her parents, Joe and Anna Lee Hubbard, and her brother Danny Ray Hubbard. She is survived by her loving family, husband Dale Kirshner, son Justin Kirshner, and sister Joanne Stumberg. Yolanda S. Ramos. Our beloved mother, Yolanda S. Ramos, passed away peacefully on December 1, 2025, at the age of 60. A service celebrating her life will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home on Wednesday, December 10th. Viewing will be from noon to 9 p.m. with a rosary and prayer service at 7 p.m. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
And up next, OPD investigating hit and run. On November 24th at approximately 5:30 p.m., a hit and run occurred in the 700 block of East 8th Street, an Odessa Police Department news release said. According to that release, a black sedan struck a pedestrian and left the scene without rendering aid. The suspect vehicle was last seen traveling southbound on Musking Gum. The victim was transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Anyone who recognizes the vehicle shown in surveillance footage or anyone with information in reference to this incident is encouraged to call 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. Reference case number 25-0012697.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.